Welcome to Daily Drive. I'm Steve Schmidt with Automotive News, filling in this week for Jason Stein. It's Monday, July 20th. Dr. Larry Burns is a self-described optimistic technologist. As an example, while some may see the coronavirus pandemic delaying the future of autonomous, electrified, and shared transportation, what he describes as the age of automobility, the former corporate vice president of R&D and product planning at GM and longtime advisor to Waymo feels the pandemic could actually accelerate the scaling of these emerging technologies. Why? There are two sides of that coin, according to Dr. Burns. On the consumer side, he sees the experiences brought about by COVID-19 in areas like e-commerce, working from home, and at-home delivery as proof points that families in a post-pandemic world might not need multiple vehicles, nor need to physically travel to accomplish everyday tasks. On the business side, he sees giant tech companies with very deep pockets and skyrocketing valuations continue to invest in these technologies and get richer along the way, something he believes traditional car companies are challenged to replicate. When will we see the age of automobility, and what are the challenges that need to be overcome to get there? What are we seeing now that might signal what's on the horizon? How will the future movement of goods inform and influence the future movement of people? We've reached Dr. Larry Burns at his home office in Franklin, Michigan. Hi, Larry. Thanks for joining us on Daily Drive. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So we are in a global pandemic, obviously, and the world is adjusting and living through that. I'm curious, what are your views on what we are going through right now relative to how is it going to impact the future of transportation? You do a lot of work around shared, autonomous, electrified, these seamlessly integrated mobility systems. Has the outlook on those technologies and when we'll see those things come to market at scale shifted as a result of Corona, in your opinion?
Actually, I think it's accelerated the transition from the century-old age of automobiles to what I like to call the age of automobility, which is transportation being based on autonomous electric vehicles that are being deployed primarily on transportation services versus the actual selling of the car. I think what we're going through is pulling that ahead. Let me explain why. First of all, we've seen e-commerce on steroids. And all of us, because many of us have been locked down, we're buying things online and we're experiencing that delivery system and the opportunity to really reduce the cost of all of that with autonomous electric vehicles is very real. So I think that's going to be an accelerator. People are working from home more, so that's going to change commuting and perhaps the need to own as many cars as people have in the past. And certainly business travel has been impacted significantly. But I think the reason it's going to accelerate is this whole future is being driven by these big technology companies. Yeah, Amazon having just recently made this acquisition of Zoox, for example. You've got Alphabet. Not at all clear what Apple's role will be in this, but I think they'll be a player. And the market caps of these tech companies are orders of magnitude or more higher than the auto players. And so while one would look at the auto industry traditionally, OEMs and suppliers, and say, my gosh, you know, this has really hit the reserves they had saved up so they could play with these technologies, actually, these tech companies have gotten significantly richer during this period. Their market caps have gone up noticeably. So I actually think it's going to accelerate. The other reason I think it's going to accelerate is goods movement really looks like a compelling use case. You don't have to protect for the occupant in the vehicle. You can let the freight vehicles take routes that are more safe. And even though it might take a little bit longer time, it's not going to bother a rider in the car, for example. And so I think this focus on goods movement is just going to accelerate the technology development and get us to the future quicker.
Outside of the challenges that COVID itself presents, what are the biggest challenges that are going to get us to that future at this point?
Well, I wrote an article for Autonomous Vehicle Engineering Magazine. It was the cover story last November, and it was called The Road to Automobility. And in that article, I make the case that what engineers actually do for a living is we make what's possible real. And we do that through a series of commercial learning cycles. And I believe automobility, again, autonomous electric vehicles is inevitable. And the use cases that it can serve in generation one commercialization are relatively modest. This isn't going to be large scale rollout. But I think we're at that point right now, that cusp on the technology development, where we're transitioning into the early commercialization, both for people movement and goods movement. And now it's just going to be learning. And each week, each month, each year, the autonomous driving system developers will be able to serve more and more transportation use cases under broader and broader conditions. I'm convinced that the safety leader will be the market leader, that the quest for safety leadership for autonomous vehicles will equal the quest for market leadership. So those players who have really deep pockets and can stay in this quest, it's akin to running a marathon, and it's sort of foggy out and you don't know your route. And I would argue the coronavirus would be like suddenly a mountain popped up unexpectedly. So those players with the deeper pockets, I think, are going to be able to stay in this game and get us to that future. They're the ones who are going to shape how this commercializes. In terms of what keeps me up at night, the biggest challenge, is, I believe, is the pushback, the natural pushback by the players with strong vested interest in the century-old age of automobiles. Those would be players like Big Oil and some of the unions and some of the supply base that have been making parts that may go away in this future. These players are very adept at lobbying. They're very adept at shaping consumer preferences. And so that will be a challenge. I believe the biggest risk is not getting to these societal benefits and consumer benefits as soon as we possibly can. If we can realize the full safety potential of autonomous vehicles one day sooner, we'll save 3,000 lives. But what really keeps me up at night on all of this in terms of the challenges are the jobs implications, and they're real. When you look at big transformations like this historically, another part of the economy booms and creates new jobs in the vacuum that was created. So agricultural jobs migrated to manufacturing jobs, for example. Now, I think you're going to see that happen here, but there's definitely a number of jobs, not just people who drive for a living, but if an autonomous electric vehicle have half as many parts as a conventional car, that's less labor to put those parts together, fewer engineers to design and engineer the parts, less sourcing. So I think there's going to be enormous jobs shakeout here, which I think can be a challenge to get to the future that I'm talking about.
I'd like to go back, because I think you touched on two things there that I think maybe I'd like to explore a little bit further. Let's start with deep pockets. Do you think the traditional OEMs, suppliers, or do you think they have those deep pockets, compared to the valuations of some of the other companies you've mentioned, some of the technology companies out there that are, their valuations are at a different level than these traditional century-old players? Do you think traditional automakers have those deep pockets?
Yeah. No, they don't. Let's look at a few numbers. Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and Alphabet together have a market cap of $5.5 trillion. Toyota, Volkswagen, Daimler, and BMW, which are roughly the four highest market cap auto OEMs, they have a combined market cap of $373 billion. The tech companies' combined market cap is 15 times that of the four largest automakers. Let's look at it in a different way. GM's market cap, I checked it yesterday, is $38 billion. Alphabet's market cap is 27 times that. Ford is at $27 billion, and Alphabet's market cap is 38 times that. Those are enormously big differences. And the know-how that you need to perfect level four autonomous driving, that last 1% of learning, requires significant server capacity, advanced simulation, machine learning. It requires access to the best people in the world that work in these fields And so I think the pockets are a lot deeper on these companies who are really driving the technology development.
So if you're an OEM and you're a supplier and you're investing these billions of dollars in these technologies, with all of this uncertainty and with consumer trust being mixed at this point, where's the ROI? Where's the payoff, do you think, for these traditional players?
Well, very importantly, you can't look at ROI for transformational technology, the type we're talking about, the way you would in a traditional mature auto industry context, the way you would, let's say, for example, if you're trying to understand the ROI and the investment you would make to bring out a next generation traditional F-150 or Ram or Silverado. And you know, I led product planning in GM for a number of years, and I understood those business cases quite well. And when you're in a mature industry that's evolving, you can make some forecasts and you can get some insight on how you get a payback. We're talking about something here that's very disruptive, very nonlinear, very unpredictable. Who would have thought during the Great Recession back in the 2008 to 2011 timeframe that you would have had Google step up on self-driving cars, Uber and Lyft emerge as transportation services, and Tesla bringing out the Model S, and that those three seeds were planted during the past toughest times of the auto industry, and now they've converged to create automobility. So the disruption came from outside the industry. There's no way you can do an ROI on that. Look at Tesla's market cap growth here just in the last month or so, and what's going on with Nikola. So you really can't think about this through an ROI lens. The simple fact is auto companies and auto suppliers have no choice but to get in front of the inevitability of what's going on with automobility. They're going to have to find a way to take investment that they would have made in the next cycle of combustion engines or the next cycle of transmissions or the next cycle of steering for humans and things like that, and pivot that money to this new future.
Let's go back to safety. You know, regardless of where an individual might fall on, you know, public safety in the world of coronavirus, clearly there is a debate. Clearly there are loud voices on either side of the debate of public health, public safety, et cetera, et cetera. If we have that debate around a global pandemic, do you think there's the human will to drive this for the benefit of saving human lives when it comes to mobility? If we're having these challenges as humans to battle a pandemic, where's the wherewithal to go through these challenges for keeping people safer on roads? You think it's in our capability to do that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I found it very interesting. A few years ago, I was asked to give a talk by BBC at a World Ideas Conference in Manhattan. And just as I was preparing my comments, I went to get my flu shot. And there was a form I had to sign at CVS before I got the vaccination. On the back of the form, they talked about the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. I go, what is this? It turns out, obviously, if I get a flu shot, it prevents me from getting the flu, but it also prevents me from giving someone else the flu. But when the flu vaccines were initially developed, there was a risk that someone could get an allergic reaction to it, and the vaccine suppliers were worried about their liability. So along comes this solution called the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. So I think there's a lot of analogy between roadway safety and these vaccines, because if I'm in an autonomous vehicle and with data, I know I'm less likely to get in a crash because I'm looking, the sensors are looking 360 degrees around me. I'm not impaired. I'm not distracted. But not only am I safer, everybody else around me is safer because I'm less likely to run into them. So there definitely is a public good here. And I think we need to use some of that same thinking. Now, I do think the pandemic is going to make people a little more gun-shy about riding in mass transit and buses chock-full with people or subway cars. But I think the phenomenon of the automobile wasn't around mass transit. It was around accessibility, the ability to go where I want to when I want to because I have a car of my own parked right outside that I can take anywhere. So I think the real form of public transportation could pivot to personalized, not mass, public transportation. And I think there's huge opportunities that are emerging around that. Plus, I also think you're still going to be able to have your own car. It might be not purchased. It might be a subscription that you take, like a lease, for an autonomous electric vehicle that you have dispatch control over and you use as part of your daily life. So I definitely think the opportunity is huge. Keep in mind, there's 1.3 million people a year dying on the world's roadways. A lot of those people are pedestrians and bicyclists and motorcyclists, not all in cars. And so I think we've got a real chance to look at roadway safety like an epidemic and to take lessons that we're learning with the pandemic now and apply them to roadway safety.
Let's go back to movement of goods versus movement of people. How are lessons learned from the movement of goods going to apply to the future movement of people relative to consumer trust, relative to scale? I'd enjoy your perspectives on that.
Oh, yes. I think the real leading autonomous driving system developers, and in terms of openness with this interview, I'm an advisor to Waymo. I've been doing that since early 2011. But these leading companies, they're doing that with what I would call a driving platform. So as they think about autonomous driving, they're not thinking about it just solely through the lens of an urban use case. They're thinking about it as a driving platform. And Waymo's position is to be the world's most experienced driver. And so what you learn about the movement of goods autonomously, whether it's local delivery to the home or interstate over the road kinds of freight shipments, helps perfect that platform. And what's interesting about the interstate system, for example, is when you look at the 47,000 miles of the interstate, some of those miles are pretty low risk. They're straight, nice weather, flat, modest traffic. And if you can convince yourself with data that you're ready to commercialize that use case, you can go into business on some routes from point A to point B and then grow this business from there. And everything you're doing is you're learning. And every time you learn something new, not only can you put it in one vehicle, you can put it in all the vehicles that you hope to be the driver for. So I believe there's a great synergy between goods movement and people movement. Another way to think about it is some of the vehicles that may be used in a metropolitan area to move people around during the day could be used also to move packages around. So imagine a vehicle that is happened to be going past my dry cleaners, swings off, picks up my dry cleaning, but it's also moving people around in the community. And eventually that vehicle is dispatched and routed past my house to serve a person, and it drops off my dry cleaning. You can almost make a case that that was done for zero added cost. So there's huge synergies between people movement and goods movement. The interesting thing about goods movement in terms of development is you don't have occupant protection. You're protecting the packages. You do have to protect the other people on the roadway, obviously. You don't have to have your vehicle go past the school zone when school's being let out. You don't have to have the vehicle do a difficult left turn. It could do three right turns. And so what if that envelope gets to my house 2 minutes later than it could have if it took the fastest route? So I think this combination of being able to develop on goods movement with a risk-managed approach and to take some of these natural advantages of goods movement, and then you bounce that against the really crystal clear value of travel time. We know that over-the-road truck drivers make about 70 to 75 cents a mile on this wage and benefit. We know that. We don't have to have an economist try to estimate it. And so I think the payback is there with e-commerce exploding, and it's a really good place for this application, and all those learnings will translate to people movement. And these companies are developing platforms, so they'll focus on both.
Well, I think, as we've already seen, it also brings into question, particularly around the movement of goods, what does the vehicle look like without the requirements inside relative to keeping passengers safe, right? The thinking of what the vehicle looks like in itself is also can be reimagined, can be up for debate in
Oh,
innovation in that
absolutely.
space.
Absolutely. I was trying to think that through 6 or 7 years ago, and I took an image of a tractor for an over-the-road tractor trailer rig. And then I got thinking, I don't need doors. I don't need windshields. I don't need seats. I don't need air conditioning systems. I don't need the steering wheels or the human controls. And on it went. And then suddenly you realize that the pile of parts that you no longer need on that over-the-road tractor costs more than the sensors you're going to put on and the processor you're going to put on to make it autonomous. So this is what gets me really excited, Steve, is it's autonomous vehicles and electric vehicles aren't just about replacing the propulsion system as combustion with one that's electric or replacing the human driver with an autonomous driver. It's about totally reimagining the design of the vehicle and reimagining the transportation system and the experiences riders and logistics companies will have using these systems. And that's where the big design innovation opportunity exists. And that's why I think traditional auto OEMs and traditional auto suppliers, they've got to think about this through a totally different lens. And perhaps to the point where they take their development efforts outside of their mainstream product development activities just to make sure they're getting the imaginative thinking that's going on. So you look at like some of the platforms that have emerged, like Rivian, or you look at the attention Zoox had gotten, or you look at even I think what GM has done with Cruise is very good, that they're doing the GM Cruise development outside of the mainstream processes within the company. Because I do think these big auto companies, because they're so process structured about getting the next cycle of products to market, they have a little bit of trouble really imagining the full scope of what's possible here now.
So you bring up Rivian. I think we've got time for one more question. You bring up Rivian, whether it's them, whether it's Byton, even some of the emerging players in Asia like NIO. What can the traditional automakers learn from these emerging OEMs whether it's around innovation, whether it's around design, whether it's around business model? What do you think these emerging players can teach the existing players?
Well, it's a great question. I'm going to answer it first in a different way. I think these startups can learn an awful lot from the OEMs. When I wrote my book, Autonomy, that came out a couple of summers ago, it was originally viewed as the race to build a driverless car, and it was going to be a story about Silicon Valley versus Detroit. And as I got thinking about it, I realized it should be Silicon Valley and Detroit. We should never forget how amazing it is what auto industry does in terms of building an extremely sophisticated product with tens of thousands of parts at the volumes that they do, at the safety capability that it has. Very, very sophisticated stuff. And as you've seen with many of the startups, they struggle when it really comes to that moment of having to build the first products at high volume. Even Tesla has gone through those learning cycles. So I think the auto companies have an awful lot to offer Silicon Valley. But with that said, the combination of what Google did with self-driving cars, Uber with transportation services, Tesla with electric, it shows us that the innovation, the big bold ideas came from outside the auto industry. So I think that what that teaches us is that the auto industry has to do unto itself before others do unto it, or do unto yourself before others do unto you. They have to view automobility as being inevitable, and they've got to position themselves to get in front of that inevitability. And I think you, rather than worry about this ROI, you need to be focusing on that tipping point moment, that magical moment when it's clear the value proposition of this new world of automobility exceeds the price, so people want it, and the price exceeds the cost, so companies want to supply it. And we've gotten really close to that tipping point. I think EVs have reached a tipping point. Autonomous vehicles are really approaching a tipping point. And getting to this future is an exciting ride, especially for those companies that embrace it. but it can be really, really scary and terrifying for those who hesitate and cling to the past. And so I think we just got to get out of this trap of clinging to the past. I'm sure there's some analysts out there, some strategists thinking, geez, with oil prices so low, we can revert back to an oil-dominated transportation future. I think one of the biggest mistakes the industry can make is go through one more cycle of investment based upon the old age of automobiles. They've got to pivot to this new future.
Dr. Larry Burns, always terrific insights from you. Thank you for joining us today on Daily Drive.
My pleasure, Steve. Thank you for having me.
That's Daily Drive for Monday, July 20th. For breaking news, go to autonews.com. And to catch up on nearly 100 stories, go to autonews.com/Daily Drive. We'll be back Tuesday.